always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Tuesday's edition. Titanic Tuesday, indeed it has been, as News Talk STL has been here, there, and everywhere all across the St. Louis region. I want to thank you for joining us here for our afternoon and evening programming. This is the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, of course. Tuesday, June the 11th, 2024. It is 4:06 in the p.m. We got a jam-packed show for all y'all here today. Chris is here. Joey's here. And we were all at Sugar Creek Golf Course this morning.
Yeah, baby.
Huge crowd. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we've had a long freaking day, but we've got a great show for you. Don't worry. We're not out of steam yet. And I just want to say how amazing it is to all of you in the News Talk STL Nation community, the fact that this radio station didn't exist 3 years ago. We will celebrate our third birthday, our third anniversary on July the 21st.
You know, I think that is what it is. When I think about it, I think that's it, 21st.
The fact, Chris, that less than 3 years later, we're at it was standing room only, mm-hmm. jam-packed crowd at Sugar Creek. Testament to Sugar Creek. Thank you so much to Dwayne, his wonderful wife, Christine, all the fantastic people at Sugar Creek. Mike Ferguson, Gabe, Joey were there doing the morning show. Mm-hmm. Chris, I, many of the other personalities stopped by. And it was really great to see this partnership and the fact that so many more of you every day are tuning in the station. No need to keep us your own little secret anymore. We appreciate all the attention, and we hope to have many more adventures in the years ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tim, you have been out to Sugar Creek Golf Club before. I had never been out there. I think I have found myself a new place to play golf. I was a little apprehensive about the distance because I was thinking we've been doing a lot of stuff in Jeff County and it's been taking me an hour, 15 minutes to get out there. So I'm thinking it's going to be that long to get out there from U City, 30 minutes.
Yes.
That's not bad to go play a round of golf.
Yeah.
Especially in a beautiful, beautiful course and club.
For those of you in the St. Louis region, yes, it is not even hardly 30 minutes. For those of you in deep Jefferson County at the very edge of our listening district, it's probably 30 minutes or less for all of you. Sugar Creek is perfectly located on that northern Jefferson County side. It also, Chris, happens to be barely 5 minutes from our other most famous advertiser in that region, Johnny's Hideout.
Yeah.
So you
thought that area looked familiar.
You were right down the road. Chris, if you had gone one more stoplight and made a right, you would have been at Johnny's.
I was wondering, were we near Johnny's?
You were very close. So folks, we want you to continue to support all these awesome advertisers. Again, thanks so much to the good folks at Sugar Creek, to Dwayne, Christine, and the entire gang for having us out today. Joey, did you have a good time there? Did you ransack the breakfast buffet they had prepared?
Yeah, I want to say a big shout out to Adult and Teen Challenge of St. Louis. Adult and Teen Challenge of St. Louis. They were the ones serving the breakfast. Mm-hmm. These are recovering addicts, and this is something they do. Being of service is a big part of any 12-step program. And they were the sweetest people, and the breakfast was delicious. So Adult and Teen Challenge of St. Louis. And I believe it's a facility that's behind the golf course as well. They have a good partnership with
Sugar
Creek.
That's awesome.
And I think Mike also, and I unfortunately can't think of his name because I'm old and terrible at things like that, but I think Mike also had the director of
Jet Ainsworth is
Jet,
his name.
Is that his name?
Jet, J-E-T-T.
Reverend was, and he was on the program as well. So if you want to hear that again, tune into the podcast on News Talk STL, Mike Ferguson in the morning. We had a fantastic time at Sugar Creek Golf Course.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Dwayne and the gang there, they practice what they preach for sure, and those are the kind of advertisers we want. So please patronize them. Chris and I, speaking of Johnny's Hideout, we've got two huge events. Man, I'll tell you what, barely two weeks away, we have two huge events the last week of June. I can't believe we're saying last week of June already. I'm not wishing summer away, but you know what? Time keeps ticking, and of course, we're all so focused on August 6th primaries here in Missouri and then the November general for the entire nation. But until we get to that point, we're going to prepare you for it. Saving America 2024. That's our event on June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone. Doors open at 6:30. Show at 7 featuring Joel Griffith and Zach Smith, our legal eagle of the Heritage Foundation. Folks, this is going to be an entertaining and extremely informative night. You'll have tons of fun. Chris and I and Joey and the rest of the gang will all going to be there. The St. Charles Funny Bone is a fantastic place for events like this with spoken word. Mm-hmm. So please join us. You got to get tickets. Jump on our website, newstalkstl.com. Tickets are free. I know this will sell out, though, because this is a limited seating venue, and we can only put so many bodies in seats, so we need you to get on, sign up, get your tickets. They are free, and join us Tuesday, June 25th. Then, opposite end of the listening world, down in back in Jefferson County, we will be at the Johnny's Hideout Debate Watch Party in beautiful High Ridge. That's sponsored by Freedom Principle of Missouri, the St. Louis Young Republicans, and Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Mm-hmm. So thank you to all of our sponsors. We Chris and I, again, with Joey, will be broadcasting 4 to 6 at the Sunset stage on the Sunset patio on the Sunset stage, and then we'll take the show inside in case it's raining or heat or whatever, just to be safe and not sorry. We'll be inside Johnny's Hideout. They have a massive indoor complex. They have a little stage in their back room. We'll have big screen TVs surrounding us. We'll turn this. We'll crank the sound up. We'll do a little show, a little pregame at 7:30, and the debate, the presidential debate, Chris, starts at 8 p.m. On June 27th.
It does, and I gotta tell you, I'm very excited about both events. I've gotta tell you, you know, our Saving America event is gonna be a little more formal, of course, with our two guests. We're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be standing room only. But the event that I'm really, really excited about is the debate night at Johnny's. Mm-hmm. Everyone's gonna be excited about the debate, the performances the two candidates are going to have. We're gonna be at Johnny's, so we always have a great time out there. You don't need any tickets. Just come on out. Of course, it's going to be a nice summer evening. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be rocking, and I am excited about it. Mm-hmm. I really am.
Chris and I may buy you a bunch of crack fries and fireball shots. Yeah, so we'll see if we're laughing or crying that night. I have a feeling we're going to be hooting and hollering at the TVs quite a bit. I have a feeling it's going to be a fun night. Yeah. Please join us for both of those events last week of June. If you're just tuning in, you missed everything we just said, we have two awesome events at the end of June. Newstalkstl.com for all the details.
Joey, how's the bingo card coming along, sir?
I think that if there's a mumble, you accidentally win the whole game. That's what Mike and Gabe were saying. If you hear anyone mumble, then you're good.
That's just a tad too easy, I think. Mm-hmm. Could we bring the difficulty just up a little bit more than that?
I think we need a come on man in there. I think we need references to Joe Biden's childhood. What is he? He was born in a Puerto Rican Jewish Palestinian neighborhood somewhere on the south side of San Diego. I don't know.
We do have to have something, and this kind of pertains to the news that happened yesterday at the Juneteenth situation where the president froze up. If the president freezes up on live national TV at the debate, that should be an automatic winner. Don't they have something like that, Joey, in bingo, where you get something's called out, you automatically win, or that's the special space?
You seem so excited about this freeze up. I'm going to have a secret remote for the TVs, and you'll be like, see, I told you.
And I haven't played bingo. And I haven't played bingo since third or fourth grade.
Mm-hmm. Joey will just freeze all the televisions. Speaking of the Bidens and them perhaps not being as happy as maybe they were yesterday, even though Joe Biden had that frozen moment, which, yeah, Chris, we got to talk about that. The big news today is, how about that? Apparently, we don't know about all of them, but at least one Biden is not above the law. Chris, you predicted this yesterday. I think even though you predicted it, and even though this was probably, I think this was the right result, I think many of us thought, man, is a jury in Joe Biden's backyard really going to convict his son? They did. Hunter Biden guilty of all charges. And apparently, Chris, the Bidens were quite taken back by this. They did not expect this result.
Yeah, there were reports that Jim Biden, the president's younger brother, looked kind of irritated in court, like he couldn't believe that a Biden was convicted in Delaware. Look, I think the case, the evidence against Hunter Biden was so overwhelming that a blind man could convict Hunter Biden of these crimes. I think any jury, you know, most of those people get on those juries. They may be partisan, but they also have a sense of right and wrong and honor and duty. And there is no way in heck, with all of the mounting evidence against Hunter Biden, not to say that he was guilty. I mean, you look at it, Tim, you're an attorney. They didn't really offer much of a defense.
No.
Of Hunter Biden, because they really couldn't. There was no defense. The question will be, will he get the 25 years that he could possibly face or less, no jail time or probation? I think he's going to get probation. I think he's going to get 2,500 hours of community service, have to pay a small fine and do some other things. But I don't think he'll see a lick of jail mm-hmm. time.
And even though the diehards and the Kool-Aid drinkers, you know, the Kool-Aid communists over at MSNBC and CNN, even though they're all beside themselves, even though they can't believe this. Yeah, Chris, you're right. Look, the only thing holding us back from declaring that there was absolutely going to be a conviction was the venue, right? That it was in Delaware and it was involving the Bidens. But this was the proper verdict of these charges. And what we don't want to have happen now is once they get over their shock and awe, because, you know, I can't wait to watch clips from MSNBC and CNN tonight and see what they have to say after they gushed all poor Hunter Biden. How old's Hunter Biden? He's like 54.
52 years old.
52 years old. And they want to treat him like he's a 12-year-old, you know? Mm-hmm. And they want to say, oh, poor Hunter Biden, and he's got this addiction. You know, so do millions of Americans. Yeah. And they don't get to use the excuse of being the president's son to completely skate until this point in life. What I don't want them to use, and a lot of commentators on our station, including Vic Porcelli this morning, who really went in depth on this, Chris, I don't want them using this to cover up and obfuscate from the other crimes of the Biden family that we've been talking about for years.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, Tim, because even though Hunter Biden was convicted yesterday, his legal troubles are far from over. He has a trial in September in Los Angeles on tax evasion, $1.4 million worth of taxes. They say he was not paid. Tim, I think another jury, even though they may be partisan Democrats and liberal, I think the evidence is going to be so overwhelming against Hunter Biden that they're going to have to find him guilty. And as you know, and as we've seen over the past few years, the courts don't play around with tax evasion. They don't care who you are, especially look at some of these celebrities. You get put in jail for not paying your taxes. And I think this is a case where Hunter Biden could do a few months in jail. A few months, I mean like 1,800 or 2,500 months, however they always say it. But I think this is a case where he could do some jail time.
Yep, and that's very possible because, Chris, federal sentencing guidelines are very strict. Mm. There's not as much latitude in the federal criminal court system for giving out judgments and sentences as it is on the state court level. State court level has a lot more latitude for judicial discretion. Yeah. And you're right. I mean, that's eventually how they got the notorious Al Capone. Yeah. You know, they couldn't get him for all the obvious things that he was doing because he never had his fingerprints on him. But one thing he could not evade was his own personal tax problems.
You know, one thing that's very interesting in this case, Tim, you expect the Washington Post, E.J. Dion, he's saying that this vindicates Joe Biden, says that his Justice Department is not biased. You know, you've got Donald Trump's campaign, of course, that Hunter Biden is a criminal, should go to jail. That is what you'd expect. One thing that's been surprising has been some reactions from some other people, conservative Republicans on this issue. Matt Gaetz of Florida, this is what he said about Hunter Biden's conviction. He said, the Hunter Biden gun conviction is kind of dumb. Thomas Massey of Kentucky said, Hunter might deserve to be in jail for something, but purchasing a gun is not. There are millions of marijuana users who own guns in this country, and none of them should be in jail for purchasing or possessing a firearm against current law. Those are two very conservative Republicans and responses that you wouldn't expect supporting Hunter Biden there. It's a little surprising.
Yeah, the charge itself, Chris, is mm-hmm. and you're exactly right, is what a lot of libertarian leaning conservatives took issue with. They're not defending Hunter Biden.
Sure,
but you're exactly right. And in fact, it's funny.
Why spend any political capital on Hunter Biden, you know, in a sense?
Right,
it's like,
right.
Okay, this is how I believe, and I'm not going to say it publicly.
How about advocate for some other poor soul, right? I'm sure you could find some other Tom, Dick, or Harry.
Exactly.
it's worth more attention.
Exactly.
But to your point, Chris, the Spectator World even piped up. They're a center-right publication online, very respected. And their headline is, could the Second Amendment and the Supreme Court save Hunter on appeal? His best shot at winning is, ironically, that he was convicted under, in their opinion, an unconstitutional law. So, you know what, Chris, in a way, though, isn't that kind of it's kind of poetic justice, though, isn't it?
How it happens in this crazy world of politics where there are no slow news days anymore. And that's why, Tim, we're glad we're here at News Talk STL to talk about this 5 days a week. A lot to talk about.
Absolutely. We will definitely continue to unpack that situation at 525 with Dr. Randy Tobler, host of The Randy Tobler Show. We'll get his thoughts on the just handed down verdict of Hunter Biden. And will the left, and when the left and the media recover from their shock, will they use that to obfuscate all of the other troubles and travails around the Biden criminal crime family? At 425, we're going to shift gears quite a bit right after this first break, or this first quick break here. We're going to come right back with David Stokes. He is the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute. And speaking of raw deals, we're going to talk about St. Louis Metrolink and how, Chris, the connection to North County may not happen.
And Tim, we have a surprise. Mr. Stokes will be in studio.
Yoo-hoo! There we go. We get him live.
Come on, David. I haven't seen him yet.
That's right. I think he's sauntering in here momentarily. And the fact that Maryland Heights, the city of Maryland Heights, which we're in here. Our overly opulent studios are right here in Maryland Heights. They're seeking to remove a St. Louis Blues nonprofit from managing their ice center. What's that all about? Yeah. Interesting story indeed. We've got Chris's Corner. Chris at 445.
Yeah, I'm going to give some headlines and a little 2024. News that you may have missed while you were there in your cubicle or there out working.
And Speaker Stump Speech at 507. Don't be deceived, folks. There are still two very vibrant tiers of justice in our country. So while Hunter Biden may have gotten a little dose of justice for the Biden crime family, there is a lot of other injustice for most conservatives around the country. Merrick Garland leading the charge against us Christian Catholics. I'm going to unpack that at 507. And then, of course, Dr. Randy Tilbert, 525. David Stokes, he has entered the green room. We're going to bring him in the studio here momentarily. He'll be joining us next on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Those behind the proposals of the North County Metrolink expansion say this comes with a price tag of $1.6 billion. The county has money issues, and County Executive Sam Page says the entire plan needs to be redone. A hybrid of the plan could be coming out in the next couple of months.
428 on the Tim Jones and Chris Sarb Show. And Tim, the St. Louis County government, the leaders want to spend more money on this. I think now can be called a boondoggle, Metrolink. No one rides it. It's not safe. And now they want to extend it into areas that aren't safe and that no one will probably ride it. We've got the man to talk about that. He joins us every Tuesday.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about spikes. I had a very short spiked.
There's some spikes somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
Dave, one day I want you to do some math before you come in. You got a nice sheet here from the Show Me Institute that talks about the amount of money that is being spent in Metrolink. I would love to know how many buses would $1.1 billion buy, or if you use half of that money to buy buses and the other half to just make the thing free, how long could you do that?
Well, I mean, the bus aspect is so important, and the answer is you can buy a lot. I did some back of the envelope math while you were speaking, and the answer is
how much is one of those buses? How much is a bus?
I don't. They're expensive. Yeah. Like a modern bus is expensive. I don't know offhand. Certainly a couple $100,000. They're not cheap, but they're a lot cheaper than light rail. A lot cheaper than light rail. And what we have here is, so the county government deserves credit on this, because the county, there's two different proposals right now. One is the ongoing expansion of Metrolink in the city, north and south on Jefferson, that then cuts over towards Fairgrounds Park in North City. That is moving forward, unfortunately, and we've talked about that on the show several times. Hopefully, that will not receive any federal funding, and it will die. That is where we are now.
Okay.
And I think there's a chance of that happening because their own ridership numbers are so insanely low compared to other applicants for this pot of funds of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
This is the follow-up proposal to that. Mm. This is taking where the city project would end in North City and expanding it into North County. And this is where St. Louis County has said no. Mm. They don't like any of the ideas that Metro and East West Gateway have proposed so far. The consultants have proposed so far. They don't move enough people. They spend too much money. So far, so good for county government to say no to this. And hopefully the city part won't ever get built and there'll be nothing to connect anyway. But, you know, the county is saying they're going to look into bus rapid transit as an alternative, which would be outstanding. So I think, you know, give the Page administration some credit where it's due here that so far they've made the right moves in the very early stages of this.
And Tim, it's very good that Cori Bush is in Washington trying to get that money for the first district because it'll never happen with her advocating for it.
We're all safe. We're all safe from more boondoggles. You know, David, I'm sure you all at the Show Me Institute have done comparison studies or you've looked at studies from other places that have mass transit where it appears to me on the surface that it works. And you and I and Chris have been blessed in life to have opportunities to travel to places like New York and Washington, D.C. and other places that have subway systems and metro systems. And it seems like in those places where you have a massive amount of people in a small amount of space, that's a good way to move people. So my first question is, does mass transit work in other places? Number two, is there a role at all for light rail in St. Louis? Like, could we have done one or two lines and it would have made sense and maybe we should have stopped at that instead of going down this eternal boondoggle?
All right, so a lot to answer. Yes, mass transit makes sense in many places.
Okay.
You cited a few spots where subways or light rail system works, but remember, mass transit includes buses.
True.
So there are many places like Kansas City and St. Louis where buses can work to supply the public transportation needs of many people. So mass transit, including buses, absolutely works in many, many places. You get into light rail and subways, it certainly works in some places. It works in Chicago. Commuter rail is great up in Chicago. The L does well. You mentioned New York and D.C., two greats. The BART system out in some, that might be the only thing out in San Francisco that works right now is their BART system. But when you get these spread out places like St. Louis and plenty of other modern cities or modern, so I say modern like typical suburban expansion where the cities are spread out to large regional areas and there's not one central defined business district like Manhattan or like university towns where oftentimes small scale mass transit works because everybody in the community heads towards the university each day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have that in St. Louis. You don't have that in lots of places. And in those places, no, light rail and other type systems like it don't work. They cost a fortune, move very little people, and you could address those needs so much better through buses. And so St. Louis County deserves a little bit of credit for saying we're going to look into buses, like a bus rapid transit system, which is basically just a bus line with some technological improvements to it and some changes to how it's operated. So give you a little bit more like a light rail or subway line, but on a bus. And that's wonderful because if that's what they choose to do, that'll help move more people in North County and cost a fraction of what light rail will. So that's what we want. So yes, mass transit is important. I've never talked anything against mass transit. But light rail is way overdone. Now, to the second part of your question, yes, 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 1,000 yeses. I think the system that we first built, let's leave aside for a second the fact that we have it and it's operating.
Okay.
But yeah, connecting downtown and the Metro East and Clayton to the airport and to all the stadiums downtown, you know, we built it. It's there. It certainly does serve. The airport should be on it. The stadiums, the stadiums are the way the St. Louis system works well. So yeah, we have it. The trick is though now, to stop expanding it. Like, because the expansions have not worked.
Just for the sake of expanding.
Right, yeah. Exactly. The expansions have not worked. The system down to Shrewsbury that has not led anywhere near the ridership numbers that they projected. They keep moving it further out in Metro East. And while that's a lot less expensive because it's corn, because they're literally putting it through cornfields, and that costs a lot less. And so maybe it's understandable. We don't need to keep building this. We've connected it to the places it needs to be connected to. And it doesn't even do a great job of doing that. But anything we go further from here is just going to be worse and less, fewer riders, more money, bigger mistakes. So it's time to cut bait and just have what we have and stop this dream of turning us into New York City.
Gotcha.
Speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, you are a well-known taxpayer advocate, you and the Show Me Institute, for the taxpayer dollar, especially taxpayer dollars that are close to home to you and I. I want to ask you about this U-City bond issue, or they want to do another jail, and what is it, another building? One thing I find very interesting with this plan is it says the council will fund the project by issuing bonds that lease building equipment to creditors. What's this all about? I know you know, you're a U-City resident. I know you're on top of this.
It's very complicated. And what I don't mind the larger plan, but what they're doing here, and the former mayor, some former council members, about 7-8 years ago, the University City residents passed a proposal requiring any sale of public property to go to a vote of the people.
Right.
I didn't even necessarily support. I don't think I voted for that when it happened.
I've seen that happen.
But that said, it passed. So now they're taking these old historic buildings and coming up with a plan to use them for a new police department and other facilities. I sort of like the plan that they have. I'm not opposed to it. But to see that they're sort of using legalese to say it's not required to be put to a public vote because the city's going to lease it back from this entity they create to build it as opposed to selling it. Mm. It's a lease, not a sale. Mm. That's the type of hair-splitting politician legalese that people hate.
Let's just call it what it is. It's shady.
It's not putting it up to a public vote when any person will read the law and see what they're doing, and a normal person would say, yes, it should go to a vote. You know, they should put it to a vote. And yeah. I say this as somebody who, knowing what I know now, would vote for it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a good, we need a better police station in University City. They're operating out of sheds now for years. They really are. Yeah. Like rented sheds. Are. So they need this. And I'm not against the plan, but it needs to go to a vote. And the opponents of the plan, who are keep pointing that out, I think they're right. And again, it bears repeating when you say it doesn't have to go to a vote because it's not a sale, it's a leaseback arrangement for public property. People just hate that, and they have a right to hate that, and it should go to a vote. A vote which I would probably vote for.
Yeah.
It should go to a vote.
It stood out to me when I saw it and read in the paper this morning. I'm like, what? Leasing building equipment back to the creditors and issuing bonds? I'm like, what?
Right. Like, and these are all just, then the state has passed these ways cities can go about doing that. There's nothing improper about that, as complex as it sounds. Yeah. And it's probably more complicated than it should be. But there's nothing wrong about what they're doing. But when the city charter says you got to put it to a vote and you say it's a lease, not a purchase, it does not require it to be a vote, people get angry, and people should be angry. And I disagree very strongly with it. I think I'd like to vote on it. And again, for the last time, I think I'd vote yes.
I'm just leery, Tim, of right hand taking from the left hand economics, well, which this seems like to me.
And David, this is a perfect example of things that drive me nuts about the argument that people always make that, oh, the more local the government, the better. In this situation, no. And in many situations like this, because sometimes when you get these very small local governments, you have one or two people making decisions. You have very small boards of maybe 5 or 6 aldermen or 3 or 4 fire district board members. And so sometimes, David, the more local it is doesn't mean it's I'm going to say something that's not grammatically correct. It's not more better a lot of times, right? Because you have less eyeballs and less things. And then you have people cutting these backroom deals or saying, well, you know, the state law says that, but yeah, they didn't really mean it that way. So we're just going to do it our way. In those situations, the local local governments are not better as much as maybe the state government.
Absolutely. And the way I like to put it, and I think I've said it on the show before, is, you know, people, we hang out in maybe activist conservative circles, and oftentimes you have people equating small government and limited government as one and the same thing.
Two very different
things. They're very different things. There are many examples in Missouri and certainly around the country, but in Missouri and in St. Louis, where small government is not limited government at all. Look at what Ferguson is doing, threatening to pull the business licenses of commercial renters when the landlords don't pay the taxes. That's not the renter's fault. There's nothing limited about that move by Ferguson in the slightest. So what you have, right, very few people have heard about this in University City. Only a few people got up and spoke for it or against it. And University City's the third biggest city in St. Louis County. Like, it's not even a small city. So imagine how this type of stuff goes over in Twin Oaks or a city of, you know, 300 people, of which we have a lot. So, yes, small government and limited government are not the same thing.
Like, like the way you put that.
Small government can do lots of negative things. And the shrinking of our media, you know, this newspapers decline, and I'm not putting a partisan bent on this. We just all know that the media, the local media is shrinking.
Sure.
The traditional newspapers who might have covered a city council meeting carefully in the suburban journals back in the 80s. As you have less of that now, you have even fewer people hearing about these issues.
Well, that's why you're here.
And I think I used less and fewer in the proper circumstances.
I think you did. I think you did.
David, before we wrap up here, tell us what's going on with the Maryland Heights Ice Center and the Blues nonprofit. What's the deal with that?
It's just a perfect example of why cities should not get into business activities in the first place. You know, Maryland Heights built this ice center in conjunction with this nonprofit to manage it. But Maryland Heights paid for most of it. And they did it, started up a year or two before the pandemic. And admittedly, the pandemic is a rare thing, and sort of, they're not looking for excuses when the pandemic hurt their model. That's true. But I don't know why Maryland Heights thinks it's the role of government to build some giant ice rink with a whole bunch of rinks for hockey, private organizations to practice. Look, you want a city put an ice rink for your residents to skate on, one rink? I get it. That's within the confines of a park system. That's fine. But what Maryland Heights built was a sort of, it's a business model. It's three or four rinks. They rent it out. They have big tournaments. That should have been done entirely by the private sector. And it has failed. Maryland Heights and the nonprofit they're now moving away from have both done a poor job of managing it. They failed to collect sales taxes for years there. So they were supposed to be collecting taxes to fund the ice rink, and they didn't even bother to collect the taxes they were supposed to collect. So Maryland Heights has been sort of funding these bonds on their own with general revenue for a couple of years now, which, because of the casino, they can do. They're probably just about the only city in St. Louis County that could do that and can afford it thanks to casino money. But that doesn't make it right. And this is a classic example of the type of thing cities should not do. Become real estate developers. Become business investors. Leave that stuff to the private sector.
David, this is probably your third visit here at the new studio. When we were downtown, used to come every week. Usually when you come, you're alone. But today you have a visitor with you. I don't know if she wants to say hello or not. Just want to give her the opportunity. No. Your daughter is here with you today, accompanying you. Make sure you don't mess up, right?
Right. She's a very hard judge of my performance. This was she's on her way to lacrosse practice. From the house to the studio out to Sportport here in Maryland Heights, which we were just discussing. It's well on the way. Sportport, which I think is owned by the city of Maryland Heights, which should also be done by the private sector, but what the, you know, she's still on a team, and when they tell her to go there, we gotta go.
That's where you play.
I want to thank your daughter for tying in where you're going to the story that we were talking about. You might have a future here in this radio thing.
A little producer action over there.
We've been speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. You can reach him at Show Me Institute, David Stokes, and at David C. Stokes on X. David, thank you so much, and safe travels, and see you next week.
See you next week, guys. Remember, next Tuesday, on the 18th, we have an event in Clayton, a Next Gen Show Swimming Institute event. So go online to our events page and check it out and join us if you can.
Yeah, feel free to just take over the show if you need to, you know, to promote things. If I forget anything,
I will
feel
do
free
so.
To do that.
Should.
All right, come back. Chris's Corner. I'll give you some updates, a little 2024 news. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk, Soros Free Radio.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Interesting thing happened at the White House. Juneteenth musical festival yesterday at the White House, and the president was there. And many people that were observing it, and you can go on Twitter and see it, they think that the president froze during that moment. I think that the president just has no rhythm and is not a part of it. And for someone that has been around black people his entire life, been in the church, dancing with him and everything, he has no rhythm at all.
452 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And I agree with LBJ there that the president has no rhythm. They have to cut him some slack there. He didn't freeze up. He just didn't have any rhythm. And the reason I say that, I'm on every morning on Dr. Tobler, who's going to be with us later on today at 525. I do his morning show. And he asked me about that clip. And I said the exact same thing. I was like, I got to give the president some slack on this. You know, white people don't have much rhythm. And Randy got quite offended by that. Not seriously, of course, because he said, hey, I played in the Bob Cuban band. I play these instruments. I'm one white guy with rhythm. So
you can still do this, Chris. I mean, you can still. I don't know.
Even if you don't have no rhythm, you can still put your hands in your pocket and do a little something.
Chris, he had the stares, though. You know, the eyes.
I'm watching. There it is right there. I'm watching. There it is.
See, look at the eyes.
Yeah.
The eyes. And look at that one. That one guy was like, hey, Joe,
yeah.
Like Pat, and they're like, I agree with you that Joe Biden likely has zero rhythm. You know, I'm not sure I have much more than Joe Biden, but I really feel like he may have gone somewhere else.
Oh, he and was that, on another planet.
That dude on the right there put his arm around him and was kind of like, hey, Joe, are you still with us?
Joe Biden, that woo! Is,
your president.
He's much, that is your president, much fodder for us talk show hosts. In the few remaining minutes here, Joey, let's go ahead and get in a quick Chris's Corner.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
All right, let's get into some quick headlines here. Did you know that Judge Eileen Cannon yesterday, she slightly narrowed, according to description, the classified documents case against Trump, ruling that, quote, prosecutors cannot charge him based on an episode in which he said to have shown a highly sensitive military map to a political advisor months after leaving office. So, you know, we heard much about that. We even heard the tapes of allegedly him doing that. Eileen Cannon has narrowed the case and said they cannot charge him with that. So more good news for the president in his cases. The FBI, Tim, are doing a victory lap. They and the Biden administration, they are showing that violent crime fell by 15% during the first quarter of 2024, with a massive 26% drop in murder. Experts noted that the FBI numbers are preliminary, however, and could contain inaccuracies. Jeff Asher of ADH Analytics, he says that the first quarter is likely correct, but in the overall percent, changes are almost certainly overstated by a good bit. And we also know too that a lot of these cities are not putting in their crime statistics. St. Louis City is one of them. Mm-hmm. So those statistics there are a bit bogus, if you ask me. Did you know that the prosecutor in the New York case, Bragg and Matthew Colangelo, they are scheduled to testify before the House Judiciary Committee on July 12th.
Ha.
Tim, that's one day after Trump's sentencing hearing in the case. The DOJ sent a letter this morning to the House Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Ohio, stating that, quote, an exhaustive search yielded no communications between the department and Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, and they skewered Jordan for spreading a conspiracy theory. Well, look, the Democrats are not stupid enough now, if they are colluding with the Justice Department, to do it through email.
Put it in writing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm sorry, that proves absolutely nothing. Senator John Fetterman, who has surprised everyone with his lurch to the center, got into a car crash yesterday with his wife. He posted a video of himself using frozen peas to help his injured shoulder, but he says they are doing fine. And some good news, Tim. The federal and Maryland officials have fully reopened the Port of Baltimore's main shipping channel. That's good old American ingenuity there to get that thing open this quickly after such a major disaster. 507, what we got on Speaker Stump Speech, sir?
We're going to talk about the continued targeting of certain Americans, but not others, by your DOJ.
And, of course, at 524, we'll speak with Randy Tobler of The Randy Tobler Show. We got a lot to talk about with him. You're listening to The Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.